this thing turned on here.
And we're now in Dr. Neubert's office with Dave Akins and John Belt.
We wanted to talk to you, I guess, just about general Saturn development, things that you remember as highlights, and things maybe that you recall, too, about the contractors. We were just talking with Widener down the hall, and he made a statement I wish we could follow up sometime, and maybe you can enlighten us on it a little bit. He said contractors had different personalities. I don't know if he meant the way they approached a problem or the way they got into the manufacturing processes. Did it strike you that way in your capacity from this office?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Can you be more specific in identifying the various contractors, maybe, and telling how one perhaps differentiated from another in the Saturn project?
Well, they differentiated, sure. On the other hand, we approached them differently, or we had to approach them differently.
Mm-hmm. Can you be even more specific than that?
So, well, let's start with the number one contractor we had when the Saturn started. It was Chrysler Corporation.
Mm-hmm.
And they worked for us with the Redstone and the Jupiter in a certain mode. Mm-hmm. And they were used to this type of mode. And when we then got transferred into NASA, to a certain extent, you know, our mode of operandi, or the way we operated with these guys, was not too welcome. So they said, look, we do it differently, and you have people with a lot of knowledge on the other side of the fence, and don't babysit them too much, you know, leave them alone. They know, they put their bid in, they know what they want to accomplish, and so we had a different approach. For example, for the very first contractor we got into bed with was number one, Douglas,
mm-hmm.
which built the S-4, not T-4, but the S-4, the very first, mm-hmm. second stage of the Saturn One.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had to inherit the Pratt & Whitney contract, the IR-10, which somebody else had developed.
Mm-hmm.
And Pratt & Whitney per se was an entirely different approach to problems.
Pratt & Whitney and Douglas were primarily airframe and air aviation Air Force contractors.
Contractors, and they were, you know, they had, Douglas got the contract. I cannot recall it anymore, how this happened, you know, but this happened just in the early times when we joined NASA.
Mm-hmm.
And the Saturn One, the first Saturn, the first, you know, we already started on the Army times. It was really an ARPA, you might recall, an ARPA mm-hmm. decision to go with a 1.5 million thrust booster with first idea was with four engines, and finally we said, no, why develop a new engine, take the H1 and run it with eight engines.
And develop it from there.
Was to be the E engine?
Yeah, the E engine. E engine was the first idea, have four of them on that, you know, and then during the process they said, well, we have to gain some time, why not use the other engine and soup it up a little bit, another 10%. It went from 150K to 165.
Did you notice any or have any problems necessarily as, let me try and rephrase the question. NASA came out of the old NACA experience, and you were bringing in an Army and kind of an arsenal type approach. Do you remember any problems that you had in terms of management, design philosophies, and again, contractor relations that were the result of these two different points of origin?
Well, yes and no. I mean, all right, let's develop a little bit now. See, the first fellow who really had some influence on our programming was General Ostrander. You know, he was an Air Force man mm-hmm. who was in charge of launch vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
And the second point was that also when the Army turned us loose to NASA, they critiqued our way of doing business. For example, they critiqued us specifically in the area of local support contractors. So, you know, that we were too close to these people, and we were really working shoulder and shoulder with them, and you know, we had a knack to, you know, to, well, dominate is maybe the wrong word, but you know, just be, you know, either done the martial way or it's not done at all. So, mm-hmm. So a little bit of this was given with us to the new company. We see they inherited 4,000 of us, and naturally everybody, you know, has some good sides and some shortcomings, you know. With this label to a certain extent on us, maybe in the very, very beginning, you know, we went the other way. Mm-hmm. And well, for example, and let me quote Patton Whitney, not because they now have a little, you know, have a little rubbing with them at the moment, as you heard. But in this time, for example, Pratt and Whitney checked out all their engines horizontally. And we said, this is not the way to do it. We want you to put them vertically because this is the way they will start, and we want to know if they work this way. And it took a long time. They said, no, we always did it this way. Everybody is happy. Everybody is fine. We do it our way. See, and they said, no, we want to test them not like this. We want the engine like this. And the engine did not ignite. Didn't ignite at all. You see? Because the timing was wrong for vertical start. That means, in other words, they had a small amount of liquid oxygen as pre-run. And then they hit it with a hydrogen to ignite it. But the time delta was so that the oxygen was out of the nozzle before the hydrogen came. See, for the weight delta. Specific weight delta, and the engine didn't ignite. So the timing had to be changed, and the engine worked fine. But see, this is a bad habit of ours that we always say, look, go with your testing, whatever you can do, as close to the natural environment you find as you can. Well, and then...
Then the way it was with the Army, or when we were over...
In the Army, we could more or less, you know, we had also in the Army naturally problems, but you know, we developed a lot of our test philosophy and check out and specific requirements of quality assurance. So we, to a certain extent, we put it into NASA, but you know, it was not accepted from day one.
Yeah, that's another question we were interested in too, is the background of experience that you acquired in other missile systems and other rockets as they were applied to Saturn, and what the differences were in operating a military missile system in operation as opposed to a Saturn program in a civilian agency.
That's a lot of difference.
Can you go into specifics again? Or make some, you know, the point?
Well, all our guided missiles for the Army were mobile. Mm-hmm. See, they were all from a mobile launcher. It was nothing over 1,500 miles, so even the Jupiter was designed to be launched from a field position. And you bring everything in what you need on wheels, or you could. And the Redstone definitely was even, you know, in Europe for a while before the Pershing. And the next thing we developed was the Pershing, which was a solid rocket, which was built by Martin in Orlando. That was the last development we had here, and the same principle as up to 200 nautical mile range, but it was also mobile in two parts. It could be joined in the field, directed, and fired. And then you have naturally to translate, or you have to automate all your actions and your operational procedure to the extent that even, you know, you do it just by the book and you don't think, you know, because thinking should be limited if you don't have the experts around.
Did you get some expertise in automatic checkout because of the military systems, with the desire that, you know, they had to be off in 15 minutes from setup? Did this speed automatic checkout along?
It did. Now, naturally, the Pershing was a very simple thing because you have no, it's a solid rocket, you check out your, you know, you bring your guidance systems up and you're oriented and you're ready to go. Even the Pershing, they could even bring the run the system up before they erect it so that they had a minimum of time having it in the vertical position.
Did this, let's see, what about logistics? Do you recall any similarities or differences in logistics from the old military days as you came into the Saturn program? What could you use in the Saturn program that you had developed elsewhere, and what did you have to discard for particular reasons?
Well, I think what we could use is, number one, we started to develop the automated checkout, and we really did it then already for entirely different reasons for the first stage alone. So the Saturn 1 per se was not fully automated, but it will be when we go for a 2 or 6 flight. It will be the same arrangement with the...
You mean by the time you got to the Block 2 vehicle?
Yeah. And but we had limited automated checkout, you know, mm-hmm. because when you have 8 engines and you know, then 8 engines times 2, you know, you have at least 32 valves which have to be coordinated, mm-hmm. you know, just pre-valves and all these things we took along, otherwise we never would have been able to equalize the flow of fuel in case an engine goes out. And then the second item what we could use very nicely was our mode of how we did our systems analysis and how we did our quality control, or a quality assurance, maybe the better word, what we had worked up on these areas, that we try to be perfect in our manufacturing. Mm-hmm. For example, in the welding process of these big structures, and these things really helped us to get the Saturn going in the way it happened. We also were well versified in engine testing, engine performance, because we have I believe even still today a very good propulsion department over in mm-hmm. Astronautics.
Were the lab arrangements back in the ABMA days pretty much the same as they were?
Yep.
Well, I guess they've changed now quite a bit.
No, we changed names, but we didn't change, you know, we still are organized really in disciplines. One guy is a structure, you know, what we did, the structure and testing have been combined because the testing slowed down of the big boosters.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We still have a guy in some control with astronics now. We still have air ballistics, which is air astrodynamics now. It was air ballistics. And so we still have our three basic things that one guy is taking care of. The overall scientific approach and mathematical approach is aerodynamics, air ballistics. And from this and the other two derives, they're one the structure, plus naturally a thrust or a power he needs, and the other fellow, the guy in some control, telemeter and measuring data.
What about the personalities in the laboratories? Did you ever have any real problems where they were fighting, say, with each other even for availability or funds, or they were hassling each other about design configuration changes and things of that nature? Did you all really sing together as harmoniously sometimes as the NASA press releases say you did?
I think we were closer together.
Uh-huh.
Than most people realize. Sure, we had naturally. If you want to make progress, you have to have new ideas. You know, and new ideas are not always liked by everybody. You know,
mm-hmm.
We really had. I must say, since the Saturn started, very little of these things. You know, now the individual. No, if I should say this, but I mean, naturally, people judge each other, and you know, everybody thinks he has a better troops than the other guy. So this is naturally, you know, if you say, now look, you get Mr. A, and you give me Mr. B, and we swap because they're equal. Everybody says we should, train people, or we should create a good image within the organization. The transfer from one department, into the other helps, but my experience, this has happened very, very little,
mm-hmm.
too little for my taste, but very often. Then.
Well, we hear a lot about the Von Braun team. I wonder if you could make some comments, maybe about how this team worked, or what really made it so successful, or was it the leadership of Von Braun personally, or the relationship.